We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. Joining me, as always, still way over there in beautiful, sunny Southern California, the one and only Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how you doing?
All things considered, pretty good, Ty. I'm out west. Yeah. I'm out west. I feel all right, and I am very happy to be back, not only with you, but with you in the present tense. We're going to continue our first time loser show. We'll do part three, but I am happy to do this show that I've been wanting to do with you for a while as we talk about, will there be college football season? What will that look like? And there is a disclaimer needed, but we'll get to that. I'm excited to live in the moment a little bit more than we have been, sort of out of necessity. Also, there's the nostalgic element to it, but I'm very happy to be here.
As you said, Dan, we're going to live in the present and talk about present day circumstances momentarily. But before we do, hello, welcome. If you just found us for the first time, we've been podcasting all off season long. We're going to continue to do so regardless of how long the off season may be. Please do subscribe, follow, listen to the show on Spotify, on Apple, on Google, wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to have you aboard the Verballer train here as we roll along through this weird period of time with no football and some uncertainty about when we may get it next. Also, check out our Instagram feed at Solid Verbal. Check out our plain old Twitter feed at Solid Verbal as well. And don't forget to join up on the Facebook page at facebook.com/solidverbal. We're going to be talking about a whole bunch of stuff here this evening. We'd love to hear from you after the show is over. Solidverbal@gmail.com or go on out to solidverbal.reddit.com. That is the illustrious subreddit that is commandeered by our good friend, Peter. Okay. All that being said, as our primer here for this episode, if you haven't figured it out, either by the title or by our open, we're going to be talking about the coronavirus and its effects on the college football season in 2020 or 2021. We don't know. We've heard weird proposals, Dan.
Yep.
Where are we going with this show?
We're going to do a quick disclaimer first, though, Ty.
Okay.
It's a good question, but the disclaimer is we're dumb, correct?
Correct.
I mean,
can confirm.
Correct anything I get wrong here. We're podcasters. In your case, a very secret redacted employee for redacted corporation X serving the interests of redacted person Y at the behest of redacted person Z. You can neither confirm nor deny, right?
Can neither confirm nor deny, correct.
Okay. We're not epidemiologists. We're not virologists. We're not in lab studying. We're not frontline health workers. We are and I know you like this term, we're barnacles on the blue whale that is college football and college sports in general. Just let's get that out there. We're dumb. We happen to be good at hitting record, but we're dumb and we don't want to come across as condescending as best we can. So keep that in mind during this conversation, because we're trying to figure out everything just as you are. We have the information that you have. There are a lot of really good reporters out there that are talking to college presidents and conference commissioners and coaches and athletic directors, all sorts of people like that. So we're trying to make sense of everything and figure out what is going on along with you. Does that make sense?
It does. The only thing that I would add is that this is not intended to be a conversation between you and I about whether college football should or shouldn't have a season.
Right.
I have zero interest in getting into that debate because, as you said, we don't have enough information. We don't have the knowledge base to advise. That's not what we're here to do.
Right.
Okay. This is a conversation about what the season might look like if some of these proposals are enacted. We can talk about some of the proposals, some of the reports that we've seen. We just want to kick it around and talk about, hypothetically, what it looks like if some of these scenarios come to fruition.
And if any of that makes sense to our, again, lesser trained brains. Why don't we start with what we know?
Okay.
What we know is there's a desire from management to play. There's a desire, probably with some concerns, if they're like other athletes, from players. And there's a desire from fans to have college football. We are certain of that.
That all checks out.
Two of them.
That all checks out.
That all checks out. We know that for younger people, I mean, we kind of know, but we could be wrong and it could change, that they're normally not as affected as some more older people or people that have immunocompromised situations. And as it relates to that and as it relates to college football in general, we know that college football involves these younger people who come into contact with all sorts of people, younger, older, whatever. The freshmen are in dorms. The older players are in apartments or houses together. I don't know if you remember your dorm experience, Ty, but dorms are gross.
People on top of people and not always the cleanest scenario. Correct.
I saw Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly was on the Dan Patrick Show yesterday. We're recording this on Thursday. May something or other. What is it, the 21st?
I
know. Time is a flat circle, Ty. But he called dorms like stationary cruise ships, which is true.
Yeah.
As far, I looked it up. You just, people are on top of each other. The term you always text me, smashing Jennies, I'm not sure what that means. you're constantly just, and it's just, I think it's inappropriate, but I really can't make heads or tails of it. But we know that. We know that to be true, and we know that these players are in, for a chunk of their days, right there, it's depending on distance regulations and social distancing and cleanliness, whatever. It's indoors in study halls, lecture halls, weight rooms, locker rooms, cafeterias, training tables, whatever, lounges, meeting rooms, indoor practice facilities, outdoor fields. It's generally, it seems, might change, a virus that is a lot more dangerous inside than outside. Luckily, it's an outside sport, but who even knows where everybody is going to be? And on game day, it's a lot of the same. And then they're also, players are coming into contact with coaches, other players, other teams, PR staff, broadcast staff normally, trainers, equipment staff, whatever. So there are people, there are precautions that need to be taken. And this is the important part, Ty, and I beg you to stop me if and when I get anything wrong. Realistically, there's going to be infection without a vaccine.
Yes.
And
correct.
And I guess a litany of proven effective treatment options. So we are operating under the assumption that there are going to be infections, and we are trying to, as football fans, we are trying to watch a sport in which everything has precautions, everything is minimized, whatever. And so the idea of football happening is, the thought is, anyway, we can't just shut down Earth for 3 years because it takes a long time for vaccines and things like that to be tested. So we are moving on, and hopefully the precautions that are taken are helpful and are thinking about player safety and person safety first and foremost. Does that all ring a little human?
Okay. The other thing that I think rings even more human and more in the line of just being common sense.
Yeah.
They can't have a season unless kids are on campus.
Right.
Now, I have seen some dispute. I think it was Bob Bowlsby from the Big 12 who said, we might be able to figure something out there, right?
And right, of course.
And here is the other assumption that I think we need to make. And look, I hate to make it because we're dealing with a public health crisis and all that. Everyone knows that. But this is a $4.1 billion industry.
Mm-hmm.
On average, a Power 5 school stands to lose about $78 million if there's no college football season. That $78 million, I know it's a lot. People will hear that number. They'll turn up their nose. They'll furrow their brow. But that money goes to offset losses in other sports. I saw LSU was mentioned in one of the reports, I think that I read on The Ringer, talking about this very issue. LSU's money that they make in football and basketball goes to offset pretty big losses in mm-hmm. other sports. So this is money that these schools depend on. We can talk about the Texases and the Ohio States of the world, but there are also Arkansas states of the world that are in a much, much different financial situation. And I think it's an assumption that needs to be made. It needs to be put out there that there is a huge financial interest, not always for the greedy reasons that we might want to attribute it to. Right. There are serious financial ramifications here that needs to be mentioned because I think it's a huge driver. It's just a thing. Let me ask you this. So with all that stuff out of the way, Dan.
No, and you're right. And maybe the conversation of should universities be this dependent on football financially, maybe that's a conversation for another day, but that's the reality of the world.
That's the reality. That is the reality. So with all that kind of out there, Dan,
mm-hmm.
if we've laid that as our foundation, where do you stand that we're going to have football? Let's say in 2020.
Okay, so I'm about 90% sure. I'm almost positive there will be football in some form. I don't know if it's a traditional 12-game conference championship type season. I know that's all kind of foreign to you as a Notre Dame fan, but a lot of these conferences, what they do in early December.
Right.
I don't know if that, I mean, nobody does. I think there's going to be something. We saw schools like, I mean, speaking of Notre Dame and South Carolina, say they're going to start early to avoid a potential reawakening of things or resurgence of things as the flu gets stronger in December, stuff like that. This is very different from the flu, but that's just the precaution that's being taken, and there's no fall break. And I know South Carolina after Thanksgiving is going online only,
virtual.
I believe.
Yeah.
Yes. So I think there is going to be an adjustment. I would assume that there is going to be an attempt to play fewer games, especially games in which teams, non-conference games. I know, as an Oregon fan, I was very much looking forward to Oregon, Ohio State, and looking forward to whenever that is played. But this is a pseudo cross-country flight that perhaps isn't as necessary as teams staying a little bit closer and having less time in close proximity during travel, hotels and planes and whatever. So I imagine it's going to be a shortened season. If I had to guess, this is an uninformed guess, but just in reading some of the tea leaves, it's going to be a shortened season. I think there are going to be a ton of precautions because as we've seen, the NCAA approved return to campuses for workouts, not practices, not official team stuff, but just workouts. And we're seeing schools, I think it was Ross Dellinger wrote about in SI, Houston spraying down their weight room with disinfectant fog.
There's just a lot.
Yeah. So that's my guess. There's going to be a quirk, and whether it's no fans, whether it's 500 fans, whether it's spacing out games and playing, six games and spacing every other week, eight games every other week, something like that. I imagine there's going to be a quirk, and you know what? We'll be thrilled with it.
How dare you steal my quirk thunder?
Sorry. Go.
I have been preaching at the quirk altar.
Yeah.
For weeks now.
I mean, everybody has, but yes.
We all have. I'm like 95% sure.
Okay.
95% sure. There was the news yesterday reported, I believe, by Pete Thamel from Yahoo about how, as you said, the Division I Council of the NCAA approved voluntary on-campus athletic activities
mm-hmm.
starting on June 1st. There's also the financial element to this, which I think, again, I'm going to reiterate, $78 million is what the average Power 5 program stands to lose. That's not Joe Rogan money, but it's close, Dan.
It is.
It's close, and that's meaningful for a lot of institutions. And on top of that, there are minds far brighter than you and I who are running constant projections, constant models, trying to figure out where the state of the virus will be come August. One would hope, given all the measures that are already in place, that we'll be headed in a good direction. I think we are already headed in a generally good direction, a better direction than we were 2 months ago.
Yeah, it seems there are pockets, but,
there are pockets,
generally
but hopefully,
speaking, yeah.
Hopefully that progress continues.
Yes.
And we can combine all that information, I think, to draw some assumptions here that there's going to be something. What that quirk is remains to be seen. The quirk could be a shortened season. The quirk could be no fans or some subset of the normal amount of fans that we'd see in a big stadium. The quirk could be pushing it off to 2021, which I love, by the way, the Stuart Mandel plan. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
Do you love it being in the media and for podcast reasons, or do you love it for public health and player safety reasons, or a little column A, a little column B?
I don't love the pandemic. Let me just get that.
No, of course not. No.
I am not pro pandemic. Want to set the record straight?
Yeah, thank you.
I'm all about the quirks.
Okay.
I'm all about the quirks. We talked about the first year of the playoff and how interest was sky high in the playoff and all these little nuances that have accumulated over the history, the rich history of college football. The quirks are things we still talk about. So I certainly, as a podcaster and somebody who talks about this, really just as a fan of the game, to some extent, the quirkier, the better. That at least makes for interesting conversation if we're going to have to go through this horrible, weird situation, whatever we're in now. So we're confident that there's going to be something.
Mm-hmm.
What, in your view, is the best reason for why we should play at all?
I mean, well, it's the idea that you can't shut down Earth for 3 years, realistically, until there's a vaccine. It just doesn't seem feasible from, and you I hate to use the word financial, right? Because the priority for, I think, all rational people is let's make sure everybody is put in the best health spot. But at a certain point, we need to think about it in terms of, okay, what are states doing in terms of reopening, in terms of what is the result of these reopenings? You know, are there outbreaks? Are there hot spots? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. As we learn more, we are going to be, this is very obvious, we're going to be smarter about things.
Right.
And so the season's still how far away, Ty? We're in late May, so we're June, July, August, a little over 3 months before the season is at least scheduled to begin. So the optimism comes from we're going to be smarter. We're going to be smarter about how to approach things from a health standpoint. And also, just life is going to involve risk for the foreseeable future. And if we're going to say college football, college sports, professional sports, televised sports are part of capital L life, which they very much are, then we just have to find a way to do these things as safely as humanly possible and react as professionally and swiftly as possible. That, I think, is the reason.
Yeah, I mean, the best reason would be that case numbers are going down, that institutions in partnership to some extent with the NCAA, like they've got a set of protocols to keep people safe as can be, to your point,
mm-hmm.
because anything involves an element of risk nowadays.
Sure.
And I would also add that there's, I hate to say it, but there is that financial element. There is. Money plays a part here. We know it does. Let's not sugarcoat it. And there are going to be a lot of institutions that kind of see their whole athletic department potentially going up in smoke unless they find a way to put this thing on.
Also, sports are an important part of American culture. If you're listening to this show, you probably have that sense. If you're listening to a college football show in late May, you probably have that sense that sports and sports entertainment is a pretty huge part of living here. Like it or not, I suppose. So if we're going to exist as a people, we're going to have to find a way to get back to doing large things. Not necessarily large gatherings, but things that stand out in society, like sports do, like college sports do, and do them with the maximum amount of knowledge going in as possible. Also, Rashad Bateman is awesome.
Rashad Bateman is awesome.
Yeah.
My boy, Rashad Bateman.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Flip side, what's the clearest reason not to play?
The clearest reason to me that we I suppose, should think about not playing is to give ourselves time to get smarter about how to do things. Because that is essentially what it's going to come down to, is time. And even if, you know, some a brilliant lab comes up with the most promising vaccine and treatment or whatever, that sort of thing takes time. I'm not saying wait until the vaccine is widely available, widely manufactured, but just the ability to get smarter about how to approach activities with a lot of people involved. Because, as we sort of alluded to earlier, this is not just 22 guys on a field and the guys on the sideline that can be spread apart. This is coaches. This is meetings. This is, you know, guys being stretched out in the training room. This is people serving them food. This is a camera person in the stadium, or like 11 camera persons in the stadium, even though they're, you know probably going to be broadcast remotely, I assume. There's a lot of people that go into a college football game and producing a television product, which this all is in the end. So the best reason is to give all of those people the best chance at, if they do get infected, bouncing back as soon as humanly possible.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe it goes without saying, but the clearest reason to not have a season is also safety.
Yeah,
it all boils down to safety.
That's my long-winded way of saying that. Yeah,
I mean, football's a physical game. These guys are crashing into each other at full
speed.
Breathing
all over each other, yeah.
Nobody can socially distance out there.
Right.
Unless maybe you're like the UCLA defense.
Shout out UMass, yeah.
Don't know if I can make that joke, but you know, there's a whole question about testing protocols as mm-hmm. well. That's a really hard part. I want to get into that next. The other thing is that we've got an unpaid workforce.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily get the health benefits to be out there. And it does involve some degree of risk to just be part of it, to kind of be.
And there's no union.
There's no union.
We've had conversations about, you know, baseball players coming back and, you know, NFL players coming back. They have a collective voice that college football players don't necessarily have in that way.
So it is a bit of an underrepresented workforce. And
yeah.
To the extent that they're out there playing, there's also an element of risk.
Can I ask you about the word protocol?
Yes.
Because I think that's going to be important. Because you mentioned tests, you mentioned protocol. How do you feel about there being this universal protocol? Is the AAC and their schools, because it also varies by state and what's going on in specific states. What's going on in Louisiana is not necessarily what's going on in California, is not necessarily what's going on in Minnesota.
Right, right, right.
So are you confident that the NCAA is going to meet with these conferences and say, this X number of people are going to be needed to be tested this often. This is what training facilities need to look like. This is what schedules need to look like. This is what happens if 3 players are symptomatic and test positive. This is what happens when 14 players.
No, 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 and no. No, yeah. I am not confident in that at all. This kind of wades into that thorny, perhaps political aspect of this, where
sure.
we've got different states doing different things.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a governing body in the NCAA that, you know, they care about the safety of the players and the health of
yeah.
their institutions. I think they will offer guidelines. I think they'll do their best to try and offer some set of, you know, policies that schools should seek to enact. But here's the reality, Dan.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to take credit for this. Andrea Adelson on ESPN.com did a masterful job laying this out. I'm going to do my best to summarize.
Good citation.
The biggest question is who pays for the testing? Testing is elemental to this whole protocol.
Mm-hmm.
Tests currently cost about $100 to $150 a pop. If you test all your players, all your coaches, test your staff, anybody else related to the program, test them a couple times a week, you're talking like upwards of $1 million, maybe even more per team.
Rogan money.
Yeah, Rogan money, of course.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Texas, if you're Ohio State, it's totally doable. You can make it work. They're not going to like it, but these are programs that are making, you know, 90s
mm-hmm.
when it comes to their athletic department. But like, if you're Arkansas State, if you're pulling in $3.5 million a year in revenue, that's a serious chunk out of your program.
Yeah.
So the NCAA can give all sorts of social distancing guidelines. They can obviously try to put forth some set of best practices. But the key question for me, as it was for Ms. Adelson, is how are they going to pay for it? Where's that money going to come from? Secondary to that, Dan, Where are people getting these tests from?
Yeah.
Where are they getting the tests from? Testing availability, we won't wade into that territory, but that's been an issue in this country.
Sure.
That's gradually improved, thankfully.
Yeah.
But where are all the tests going to come from? Some schools are trying to partner with labs. Others may be trying to make their own test. Perhaps there's a moral dilemma for some, like, are we taking tests away from other people who may need them more? There's a whole thing around where are they going to get the tests to begin with? How often are they going to test? Well, obviously determine how many they need. So that's a fundamental question around testing protocol. And then there is the question that I think we talked about at the top of the show. What happens if somebody actually tests positive?
Sure.
There is a difference of opinions about what happens if somebody does test positive. There have been some out there pointing to this very instance saying it would be catastrophic. We can't start the season up. We can't move mountains to formulate whatever kind of season we're going to have in 2020 only to shut it down. That would have horrible consequences for players, for coaches, probably for fans, but more so for athletic departments and what they're looking for, what they need from a financial standpoint. There are others still, like E. Gordon Gee. You remember that crazy guy?
Yep. West Virginia president now?
Now at West Virginia. He basically said that we're going to have to find a way to live with it. And they can't shut the whole thing down. Maybe tracking a little bit more with what you said at the top. So these are all real questions. I don't have answers to any of them, nor do you. But just to give you a sense for what schools are going to have to try and deal with and consider as they put together a season, I think testing protocol is key to the whole thing. There are options out there. There are clearly a lot of discussions taking part about this very subject. But testing protocol, I think, dictates ultimately where this thing heads in the short term and certainly in the longer term as well.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, not on a flip side, but in addition to what you've said, and I think that's all correct, is I think it's a fair assumption as test numbers keep going up and up and up. And I know that there are questions about the accuracy of some tests and false positive, false negatives, whatever. It's a safe assumption that there are going to be more tests available. And
yes,
I'm speaking for me. Tests are going to be more accurate by the time we get to a potential fall camp or a preseason camp, right?
I would hope so.
I would hope so as well. It certainly doesn't think it'll get worse moving forward. So I think that's an important thing to remember. And football is a game that already packaged in football, there is risk, right? There is amount of physical risk involved. So players go in knowing about the physical risks involved in the sport itself. And so I think there is going to be an element of this is what we do. This is why we came to this school.
Yeah.
And I think there could be people that are uncomfortable playing and uncomfortable with being put into that situation. And it would be very hard for me to criticize them. If they're concerned about their health, it's very difficult to sit here as somebody who moved across the country to be in a more isolated place for me to criticize them. So I'm going to understand all of those things. So the assumption is things are going to keep trending in a positive direction, knowing that there's probably going to be some sort of societal and international second wave of some kind. We are going to be better at approaching the situation. That's my opinion.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Let's move on now and talk about some of the actual things that are being kicked around.
Sure.
The one that I think is somewhat assumed is stadiums and either no fans or some smaller grouping of fans.
Mm-hmm.
Is it plausible to do that? I'll say this. It is logistically possible in some places.
Sure.
I don't know if it makes a whole lot of sense, but logistically speaking, if you're Gene Smith at Ohio Stadium and you've got capacity for 100,000,
mm-hmm.
it's entirely plausible that you could get 20% filled.
Sure.
And he's already running projections. He's slamming over Minitab trying to figure out how many he could put in the horseshoe depending on different guidelines. The question is, if you're like Wake Forest, right, and your stadium capacity is 31,000, 32,000,
mm-hmm.
is it worth the trouble for you to pack in like 6,000 people?
Well, once you're in the stadium, it kind of makes sense because you can spread people out for sure. And being outside, and there are dome stadiums we know about, obviously, with Syracuse and FCS is a couple. I think Northern Iowa, we know we've been to the Fargo Dome. So that becomes a little bit trickier because the threat, I think, is a little bit more or a lot more inside. Again, not doctors, Ty. Not doctors. I think it all sounds reasonable, but then we talk about tailgating and we talk about entering through entrances and catwalks and concourses, and it is a lot of people still in one place coming into contact with one another with the ability to spread something that's highly contagious. I'm not fully on board with figuring out a right number. I just assume play in front of no fans.
Yeah.
If that gets us to a season in a cleaner way, I just assume play with essential stadium people only.
I know. It's such a thorny thing. And
it's like the conversation of like what constitutes cheating.
Right.
Well, I hugged her. Well, I mean, it was like a peck. Like we're trying to navigate and negotiate shades of gray of, is this potentially catastrophic? Whereas we could just say, you know what? Maybe we'll just not peck. Maybe we'll just not hug aggressively.
Like even if you let in some smaller audience, how do you pick who the people are?
Sure.
I've seen some things about there being a point system, and you know, I think logically they could figure out a way to do it, but it's complicated.
Right.
And when you're in the stadium, I don't know how the hell stadium staff enforces social distancing or any kind of distancing measures that they might have. You know, this is an interactive experience. Part of the reason why you go to the game is to be and celebrate with other fans.
Mm-hmm.
If you're spaced out by a row or however many seats, if you're wearing masks in there, I would imagine that would damper somewhat the atmosphere inside of a game. It might not be worth the experience, the trouble of getting there and going through all the motions. I personally don't think it makes a lot of sense if you're a fan. Put aside the risk of getting sick, the atmosphere to me, that's right. What makes live sports so great. Mm-hmm. It seems like that would be a hollowed out experience. So they could
like
definitely
a spring
pull it
training
off.
Game.
Yeah,
like a terrible spring training game.
They could definitely pull it off. If you're Gene Smith, again, they're trying to come up with models where they could fit 20, 50,000 people in Ohio Stadium, depending on state guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a big school like that, if you want to try and come up with a way to get some of that revenue back, it's of course not going to be the same. There is that quirk, but if you can pull it off, then, you know, go for it. But gosh, I don't know if it makes a whole lot of sense if I'm a fan. That to me is where it sort of doesn't ring true.
It's going to be a weird looking product on TV, but it's a product on TV, Ty.
It's a product on TV. So some of the other proposals that we've read about,
mm-hmm.
and perhaps one that I think seems the most plausible, is some bit of a shortened season. As you've mentioned,
right.
I think earlier in the show and time and again, as we've talked about what things actually look like, but a shortened season that might mean the loss of non-conference games,
mm-hmm.
right?
Could push the non-conference schedule a year, 2 years, whatever.
It could mean maybe starting a little bit later or getting rid of bye weeks. Like it could mean any number of different things to try and shorten the season. But where do you stand on that? How do you feel about that?
I'm good with it. I mean, if it's for sensical reasons and it gets us football and there's a clear line that shows that everybody involved in a college football program is going to be, they're all going to be around people less and they're going to minimize their chances, It's fine by me, Ty. It's totally good by me. But I say that as I am invested. I'm literally invested in there being a college football season.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want you to come at this with people not understanding. We're stakeholders in this. We want there to be a season. And we had our news that we posted on social media a little while ago that, you know, we're building out the solid verbal. I don't say this as a non-stakeholder, as an impartial observer.
Yeah.
So whatever gets us there, selfishly, as the barnacle riding the blue whale, I just want there to be football. And I want there to be football with an asterisk of, we are minimizing risk and we are taking necessary human precautions. That's all I want.
I do worry about a program like Navy.
Sure.
Navy obviously gets a ton of its traction from the game against Notre Dame and the game against Army. And those are non-conference games.
Correct.
So what does a school like that do?
Does Notre Dame do? They just play their ACC schedule?
I guess okay. That's what it comes down to.
How many games is that?
Six.
Okay.
I'm assuming that some bit of their other games could be put on as well, but I don't know where the Pac-12 stands. They play some Pac-12 teams. So
we've got Independence. We have, we got BYU, UMass, Liberty. Yeah.
So it gets tricky.
Different. Yeah.
It gets tricky trying to figure out what a team like a Notre Dame does. And I'm sure they're talking about it as all schools are, but I do worry about some of the schools, the smaller schools that rely on that game to keep their programs afloat. Mm-hmm. I am curious to see after all this ends, if there are any sacrifices in terms of, you know, football programs falling by the wayside. I think it's entirely possible. You don't root for that, but okay. So I think we're both signed on to the fact that we want football. We do have a vested interest here, but at the same time, we're willing to kind of deal with that shortened season.
Sure.
Seems doable, right?
I will happily deal with the shortened season.
What do you think about a longer season, but moving it?
Well, it becomes trickier with TV because there are other sports and other programming, and certainly every state is different. We've had these, you know, we've had conversations about, you know, if California is being more cautious, what does that mean for the Pac-12 and potentially starting football in August? And we've had, you know, the governor of Oregon come out and talk about large gatherings, though not specific to college sports. And so we've had those conversations about conferences playing at different times. It would be fascinating. It would be pretty amazing for us to have a spring and fall season in 2021.
Oh, man, give me that. Give me that. I'll take it.
A year long. My God, you might not sleep. It's hard to see that happening. It almost at this point with campuses being reopened for workouts for athletes, it almost feels like a binary thing. Like it's either going to happen in the fall or it's just not going to happen. And it's going to be postponed till the fall of 2021.
I am intrigued because of the quirkiness.
Of course.
Of that. I did not write down the exact numbers, but I saw that ESPN's sports and information desk did something like there hasn't been a college football game played in February since the 19th century.
Hmm. What a century.
So that would be something intriguing. And it would, as you said, pose all sorts of weird scheduling mishaps. I think it's less likely because of that. Logistically, right. Again, just because there is so much money on the line, they'd figure out a way to pull it off. It'd be hell to manage all that scheduling. But they would find a way to do it if they had to, knowing what the stakes were. That being said, my hunch is they're going to try and avoid it however possible. They might not have a choice, but they're going to try and avoid it however possible just because it makes things far more difficult, not the least of which is trying to play a game in Minnesota in late
Boise,
February.
In Boston, yeah.
Yeah, in Madison, Wisconsin, places where it is super cold would be an interesting new dynamic. I'm all for it. Two seasons in one calendar year probably would kill me.
That's a lot to ask of athletes, too, I guess.
Probably would kill me, could kill them.
By the way, when you say kill, you mean exhaust.
Exhaust.
Let's be very
yes.
clear. Yeah.
That as well.
Yeah.
But from a fan's perspective, Dan?
Yeah.
totally separate.
Be amazing.
From the whole pandemic thing and all the implications of that, the horrible implications. From a fan's perspective, that's an interesting 2021 slate, isn't it? To get two presumably full or close to full seasons in the span of one calendar year.
Unprecedented. Yeah, it would be wild. We would be waist deep, shoulder deep in college football for an entire year. Would that just, it'd be crazy, especially with the draft and especially with players now, promising guys who finished their sophomore years going into their junior seasons potentially this fall, like Trevor Lawrence. Do you play a spring season or are you just going to the draft now that you're 3 years out?
They would have to push the draft back.
The eligibility of the draft, though? It's interesting. I don't know. It is,
and it affects recruiting as well.
First of all, have you seen how many commitments there have been?
Yeah.
In on the recruiting trail? Our pal Bud Elliott from 24/7 has been tweeting about this. There's something like 700 in this cycle, in the 2021 cycle, there's something like 700 plus verbal commitments. And at this time last year, it was like 330. And that, well, to me says, okay, guys are not sure what's happening and they want their spot. They want to shore up that scholarship. And two, when things begin to open up and when we see games, whenever that is, you're going to see a whole bunch of decommitments tie as players actually are able to visit campuses and actually, and that's another thing though. That's another, a whole other conversation is what does recruiting look like? What do official visits, unofficial visits, camps? This is when players are traveling and meeting coaches and being scouted by assistants and whatever. There are recruiting seasons to college football. So what does that look like? Do we have players opting to, you know, go to schools within driving distance more than they were likely to fly 1,000, 1,200, 3,000 miles? You know, are we going to have Oregon recruiting players from Texas, from Florida, from Missouri? Are we going to have Michigan bringing players, Ohio State, from Georgia, from Florida? What does that look like? Are players more likely to visit schools that they know they can control the travel to? I think that's fascinating.
I've been thinking about bands.
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to see bands this year, traveling bands.
You know, like, this is a respiratory virus that spreads via droplets.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to have a kid blowing into a tuba.
Yeah. Sousaphone, sir.
And expect that's like not a risk to people around him. And that's a shame. Because the bands are part of college football. They're part of the fabric. They make it what it is. I think in any circumstance, that's something that falls by the wayside. And loudspeakers get a lot more a lot more action. I wonder about mascots, though. Like, if you're the Nittany Lion.
Okay.
The Nittany Lion is pretty covered up.
I'm assuming mascot by mascot case, I think.
Yeah, I think the mascot thing would be interesting to look at who'd be out there and who wouldn't.
Ralphie's probably safe, but that's Ralphie handlers, too. So you're talking about humans that aren't necessary, fully necessary. I understand if you go to a Colorado game, it almost feels
necessary. Whoa. Are you suggesting that we might let Ralphie loose without the human handlers? Because I'm all for that.
I think that's the only answer.
Yeah.
And that's how we really test our mettle as a society, is how we deal with an unencumbered Ralphie.
And Bevo.
Sure. We have Bevo. I mean, we have an eagle at Auburn. We've got Reveille in College Station. We've got a traveler at USC without a rider. That's interesting. I don't think any of these things are happening. I think we are really going to go bare bones with this.
Yeah.
What do you think about the in-game experience? What do you think gets altered?
That's where I was going to go next. Media coverage.
Yeah.
Media coverage. So that to me seems like it would feel the most real for college football fans watching the television product.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose they could do some virtual version of College Game Day, but they're not going to campus. They're not packing everyone in. It's not built by the Home Depot, at least not in the same way that it's been for all these years, with people crowding and wearing the hard hats and bringing the signs.
Right.
They would have to, and I'm assuming they are already thinking through what is our Saturday game plan look like if we can't gather and put on that kind of party.
I think they would do it from Bristol. I don't think we're talking about a Skype game day. I think they would gather in Bristol.
I don't know what that looks like. but I'm curious, and it would feel different. It would feel mm-hmm. different for people. Are Fowler and Herbie going to go to the game and call it?
No, I think they'll do it remotely.
I think we would see an uptick in remote broadcasts. Now,
yeah.
This is something that actually a lot of fans don't know, but mm-hmm. many networks have the capability to do this, where they send cameramen, they have fixed cameras, they have all sorts of technology on site for the game, people tracking the plays and whatnot. But to cut down on costs, they actually have a remote recording booth. Now, I did ask around about this, and there is some question around how would they do this at scale? Because there are only a limited number of these so-called remote booths that are out mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we're going to have like our friend Kevin Brown talking into a blue snowball at home. You know, like, I don't know how exactly that's going to work out. I don't know if they're right. going to be doing a podcast like you and I do in order to get that audio for a game. But I think that feels different as well.
Yeah, I mean, most major areas, cities, big towns, whatever, will have radio studios with satellite uplinks and those the super fast audio connections. So that's, I'm not as worried about that, but you're right in that there is going to, I mean, and I'm sure this is all happening in Bristol. And if you're listening to this and you produce for Fox or ESPN or CBS, solidverbal@gmail.com. Educate us, inform us. We know a lot of you that are at those places listen to this show. Educate us. I think they'll find a way. I'm not terribly worried about that. When I said in-game experience, I'm talking about like, there's going to be fewer false start penalties, Ty.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Offensive linemen aren't going to be hearing ghosts on the road because the crowd is so loud. And kickers may not be as skittish. College kickers might become a lot more accurate. There's a lot to be, you know, maybe teams are better in the red zone because there isn't a student section bearing down on them in the same way at the same decibel level. I think there are going to be certain things. I wonder about the data points after the year, if there's going to be something kind of shocking uptick or downtick wise.
Here's one for you. One of our favorite bits on the show, the letdown look ahead sandwich.
Sure.
A lot of that has to do with where the game is played. We mm-hmm. also have home dog of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, what do we do for the home team in a game? Give them 3 points to get... They get 3 extra points, right?
Mm-hmm.
In some places, Absolutely. Like Lane Stadium, it's 5 points per our friend Phil Steele.
Wow.
What comes of that metric?
I'll go back to the fact that I am an Oregon Duck fan, and the major advantage, I mean, Oregon is going to be good this year if they play this year, but the major advantage that Oregon has in hosting games is we've seen a lot of big teams go to Autzen Stadium favored or looking like they're more talented, looking better. And Autzen is one of many stadiums, the Swamp and, you know, Baton Rouge and Death Valley, all these schools that are really difficult places to go. Suddenly, the way that those stadiums are constructed and a lack of a full stadium, the home field advantage goes down. So Oregon hosting Ohio State becomes a lot less scary for the Buckeyes if it happens this fall.
All sorts of weird nuance.
Mm-hmm.
Weird quirks here. And I think we're staring into. I think that's where this thing is headed. If you had to make a prediction now.
Yeah.
What's the date again? It's May
21st.
21st. Thank you.
Yeah. A Thursday.
If you had to make a prediction on this May the 21st as to where we'll be on, say, August 21st. Of course, we'll be here. We'll be recording because we're nerds.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. where will the sport of college football be on August the 21st?
I think nervous, but gearing up.
Yeah.
And I'm hopeful we will not be doing like an X's and O's deep dive of Moana on August 21st. I am hopeful that we're not going to be doing the, you know, breaking down Shiny, which is a good song, good tune. I don't know if you're familiar with the full soundtrack, but I'm hopeful that we are going to say, okay, we are a week out of week zero. And I am nervous, but eager to see how precautions are taken and how this all plays out. That is, I'm going to stick by my 88% to 92% sure we are going to see an earnest, in good faith attempt at a safe college football season this fall.
I agree with you. I think August the 21st, we're going to be doing previews.
Mm-hmm.
And we should know more, by the way, I would say within the next 4 to 6 weeks. Because the one Definitely. Thing that is widely assumed as you read media reports, is that schools need about 2 months to get ramped up. to get ready for this. And so we should know soon. We should know soon about where things are headed. No doubt people are out there wargaming right now, trying to figure out where all this is headed. We're not against doing another show like this when we have more information. But the truth of the matter is we get emails about this every day. We get tweets about this every day. People wondering, what is the state of the college football season?
Right.
The answer right now in late May is we don't know. We have some guesses. I think Dan and I are on the same page about where we think this is generally headed. We feel good that there's going to be something. We just don't know what it is and in what format. I tend to agree with you. I think they try to start it nervously on time and get as much of it in as they can. I don't think there are fans in stadiums, at least not at full capacity. My guess is that local authorities have difficulty containing tailgaters, but we can talk about that on another day. As we get more information, we'll be here. We'll be talking about it because, as you've been saying all along here, we definitely have a vested interest and we know that you out there do as well.
Listen to the quietest people on this. Beware, yes, beware the loudest and most confident.
I think that's great advice.
On the season.
Great advice.
Listen as closely as possible to the quietest people. In life, maybe. I don't know.
The quiet storm. All right.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, solidverbal@gmail.com. That's where you could reach out and let us know your thoughts. We want to get them. I expect we're going to get some very diverse opinions on this topic.
Sure.
Send them over. It's okay. Yell at us. Yeah. We don't care. We're just trying to be part of the conversation right now. Also going out to solidverbal.reddit.com if you want to be part of the subreddit. My guess is that there'll be a teaming conversation over there as well about where all of this is headed. Let us know what you're thinking, where your head's at.
And if you're on the broadcast crew, if you are a decision maker at any of the networks that are planning on broadcasting whatever the college football season is, solidverbal@gmail.com and tell us. We're not going to use your name on the show, but tell us your contingency plans. Tell us your conversations right now, and we will inform the most beautiful podcast listenership in the entire world.
That is all I have, Daniel.
That's all I have.
The only other thing I'd add is what I said at the top. Follow along on Spotify, on Apple, on Google, wherever you get your podcasts. We're going to be doing this show for as long as the off season lasts. We're going to be
here. Can I ask you one more question just because we've been asked this question?
Please.
Completely off topic.
Okay.
We entered into an agreement with a talent agency, WME.
Yes, confirmed.
William Morris Endeavor.
Yes.
Are we billionaires now?
No, we are not.
Okay. What does that mean? What does that change? What are we planning on doing? Just be vague and big picture. What would we like to do now that we are trying in earnest, I would argue for the first time, to really build up the universe of the Solid Verbal?
So we've been doing this since, what, 2008 now?
Mm-hmm.
We've joked that we are each other's longest relationship.
That's true.
We're really proud of what we've built up here with the show, with the Solid Verbal brand. And we're trying to put together a team that can help us take this as far as we think it can go. We want to scale up. We want to do more. We want to be more creative. Mm-hmm. We've got a great fan base, people who are fully engaged with the kind of stuff that we're putting out there. And I think we want to be in a position where we can tap more into that. So without getting too specific with it, because we don't have specifics, no, we're not rich. And we're just really excited that we can scale up potentially in a really exciting way that gives people more of what they want.
Everybody listening is smart. I'm positive about that. You've seen what podcasts have done in terms of growing, in terms of working and creating other shows and video and doing additional shows and being even more inclusive of listeners and sort of building out a universe. Check all of the above. That's what we are building to. We have spoken with a lot of really smart people, people you would know if you saw their names written down. You're like, oh, huh, interesting. Whoa. We've spoken to a lot of these people over the past 12 years. We have not been organized in this way.
No,
we've not had professionals on our side in this way. So we are very excited to build things out, and we can't do any of it without every single person, most of the people, maybe some of the people, but almost everybody that's listening. So we're very excited to share things and build things with you.
That sounds good. That sounds good. Did not expect to be on the front page of the Hollywood Reporter, though.
That was news to me as well.
That's a new one.
Yeah.
To say the least. All right, Dan. Yeah. So this has been an interesting conversation. You know how to get in touch with us. Dan, you stay safe. You wash your hands out there, okay?
Yes, you too.
I'm going to do the same over here in Eastern Pennsylvania. For that guy over there on the far side of the US of A, for myself, Ty Hildebrand, over here in Eastern PA, thank you so much for downloading, for listening. And yeah, as always, stay safe, stay solid.
Peace.